I'm Mark Purcell, and this is Cincinnati Edition for a Saturday, which means it's time to go on the money with Chris DiSimeo.
A much better week on Wall Street last week, the stock market shaking off the two-week slump that it had been mired in. And yesterday morning, the much-anticipated September employment figures sent share prices higher at the outset. The estimates had been for 113,000 non-farm payrolls. They got pretty darn close at 114,000. The actual unemployment rate itself fell surprisingly to 7.8%. And as far as the markets were concerned, they paid particular attention to the uptick in the participation rate, more on that later, and the upward revision of both August and July non-farm payroll growth. And to help us sort through this pile of data, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Pete Sorrentino, a chartered financial analyst, more than 25, maybe 30 years in the investment business now, Pete. Mm-hmm. It's been many, many moons. Now at Huntington Investment Advisors, Pete, a constant fixture on CNBC, Bloomberg, and other fine investment media outlets. Pete, thanks for taking part of your weekend to be with us.
Chris, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
So, Pete, surprising kind of numbers yesterday. Lots of things are surprising. The market's up about 20% year to date, which doesn't feel like that, but that's kind of where we are. What are some of the biggest surprises in the financial markets from your perspective so far this year?
It's been remarkable, Chris. We've seen really a much better year than anyone would actually admit that it feels as though we've had. With the exception of the Spanish market, really all the European markets are up as well. And yet from their headline—
That is shocking.
Even with the currency, and the euro has been weak all year.
Even the Greek stock market?
A Greek stock market, apparently the risk on trade, with exception of the IBEX, every one of the European markets are up. So even with the acknowledged fact that most of those economies are sliding into recession. So it is rather fascinating to watch the equity markets. It's the rally no one loved.
Yeah.
We sold off all the way into July and have basically recovered all of that now.
It's amazing. And then the IBEX, of course, that's not what Marlon Perkins and Jim used to go in search of on Wild Kingdom. That's the acronym for the Spanish stock market.
Exactly, sir.
Is it possible, then, that some of this turmoil in Europe, despite the rally that's taken place over there in equity prices, might be driving other global investors and investors here in the United States back towards American-based companies that don't seem to have that perceived risk?
We did see a major trend in that. It's interesting, though, almost every pundit that you'll hear talk on television has talked about going to the blue chips, the safety, the dividend payers. And yet, if you look at domestic stock performance, it's really been the NASDAQ, led, of course, in large part by Apple, but it's been strength in the NASDAQ stocks that have actually led the market this year. So despite all the chatter about safety and security, investors' appetite for risk really seems to have reemerged.
And yet, despite the appetite for risk that seems to be percolating up. Yesterday, for example, in the Wall Street Journal, there was an article that was bemoaning the fact that there's not as much participation in equities, that the percentage of American households that own equities and equity mutual funds has been declining. And this is a rally that's taking place and it's a parade no one's watching. Is that a concern, or is that something that might be signaling an opportunity?
It does create, I think, if you pay attention to the old saw on Wall Street, they say it with a whisper and not with a shout. When the widows and orphans get in, it's time to get out. Well, if you take the converse of that, and you're right, retail investors have been net sellers throughout this year. And even on these rallies that we've had, the volume has been, very, very tepid at best. So I think you could look at that and say that if the crowd psychology typically bets wrong, then there are still opportunities out there in the marketplace that can be exploited.
Where are some of these opportunities lurking? The sectors, if you kind of divide the market overall into the different sectors, component sectors, 9 or 10, depending on which sector you're looking at, where have valuations gotten a little stretched, and where would investors be advised to be looking for some bargains?
Well, really, it's interesting. The politics have bled into this year so heavily that you see an awful lot of distortions in the energy space. We've seen coal names that fell and then fell even further.
Just got crushed.
Absolutely destroyed. And then you saw, after the debates, you saw a rally in coal stocks. Suddenly, perhaps, carbon won't be such an issue going forward. But we have seen a real push, again, on the technology side. You've seen a lot of those names get overextended. Everyone loves that group. In agriculture, we saw that with the hiccup when Deere and Caterpillar both said, look, we're looking at slow sales for a couple of years now. Those stocks got summarily, slapped senseless as a result of that disclosure.
Nice alliteration. So some of these companies then, so the ag sector might be a little overextended, the technology sector might be overextended. How about consumer staples? You know, the brand name companies with massive balance sheets and giant piles of cash from which to reward shareholders with dividends. This week we saw one of the former Dow components, Kraft, split itself into two different companies. Are the consumer staple companies something that are still offering value for investors, or is that area also just a crowded trade?
Really, the consumer space is one where stock picking really pays off, and we've seen that. Costco came out this week and talked about how their same-store sales were very strong. We overbuilt during the 80s and 90s retail in the U.S. And
big
so
box kind of stuff.
It's absolutely we're seeing that attrition get down to the likely survivors. And so there really are, if you focus again on cash flow and balance sheets, there are names that you want to play in that group.
Thinking of these, one of your earlier comments, we talked about coal. I guess there were a few people who watched the debate on Wednesday, and regardless of who you would want to see emerge victorious, are there certain groups of stocks, are there certain sectors of the market that, as a professional investor, that would tend to do better if the incumbent is not reelected, and are there other groups that would tend to do better if the incumbent is reelected?
We've seen that sort out all through the summer. And again, if you watch the different internet sites that handicap the election, you could kind of get a feel for then correlate that to stock performance. And as the incumbents' numbers were rising in the polls, again, energy stocks were taking it pretty significantly, despite the fact that at that time crude prices were holding up, coal prices were holding up, the stocks were getting hit. Healthcare is another wild card. Finance stocks have sort of been blown in the winds of change back and forth. So you definitely saw sorting out depending upon the political winds. And again, after the debate, you saw a quick reversal of that in trading that next morning. But again, it's just something very transitory at this point.
For those investors who are unwilling to stick their financial toe in the equity waters, I'm reminded of a German tourist in the United States who was fishing for sharks down in Florida. We were in Daytona Beach during the 2000 election, and he was reeling sharks in, and there were people beyond where he was fishing for sharks who were swimming. And I asked him if he thought that might be a little dangerous, and this wonderful accent, he said, "Oh, yes, once you step into the water, you become part of the food chain." For those investors who might not want to get that particular food chain lesson, the bond market still has some little pockets. Is it okay then to follow the Fed or to try to get in front of the Fed into the mortgage-backed market, or municipals still a reasonable bargain?
Well, despite Meredith Whitney's proclamation 2 years ago that we were going to see, you know, wholesale default on the part of municipalities, they have remarkably been quite resilient, quite inventive in terms of being able to preserve themselves. And so at this juncture, given that regardless of what takes place, you have to believe that income tax rates will go up. There are, you know, again, if you do your homework, there are clearly bargains to be had in the tax-free market for the retail investor. In the taxable market, the Build America bonds, whole class of bonds that by neglect no one's really paid attention to.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to imagine. So, what, 180, 590 billion of these things were issued, and then the program was shut down, so you have scarcity value.
Exactly, and they're underfollowed, and yet you have to be, again, careful with the credit because behind this is ultimately the issuer. But again, there's a pocket of yield that because the giant institutions can't play in that water because, again, there's no liquidity.
They can't get in or out.
Exactly. And so for them, that's not an asset class they favor. So for the retail investor, that's clearly an area where there are opportunities to be yielded.
I think interest yields somewhere in the, 4.5-5, depending on the issuer?
If you're willing to commit. And it is definitely an attractive alternative, especially for a retirement account.
Yeah. That's right, because these are bonds issued by municipalities, but the interest is taxable. So
exactly.
They were designed really to appeal to retirement accounts.
Precisely.
Yesterday morning's jobs report, I haven't seen it come that close to consensus estimates in a long time, right at 1,000. Barron's last week made a big deal out of the participation rate. And a few years back on this, right here on these airwaves, you brought up something called, U6. You have your handy-dandy chart
yes.
there in front of you. What jumps out of this week's report on September employment? Was it the uptick in participation rate, the downtick in the overall unemployment rate, the revision of July and August? As a professional investor, what strikes you as being noteworthy in this report?
Well, one, on the short-term numbers, we saw, and this was not just in the U3 number, which is the one everyone focuses on, but really on a number of the other components of that. The trend was that we are seeing gradual improvement again, and it's much more subtle in the other numbers. It's a tenth of a percent at best. The U6 number, which is the overall, in the workforce in its entirety.
That takes into account people who are discouraged or underemployed.
Underemployed, exactly. Working part-time when they would normally work full-time in positions for which they're drastically overqualified. That number was again unchanged at 14.7. However, that is down from 15.7 last year. So the trend has been, you know, has been in the right direction. We had a little stall out there during the summer months, but it is in the right direction. The disconcerting thing is that we have to remember that we have so many unemployed from the sell-off who are the economic decline that are still in that number. And so we need to get the jobs number up to something like 2.25 to get them put back to work. What does work in our favor is that, you know, thanks to the baby boom generation, 10,000 people turn 65 and retire every day. So the job force is actually shrinking somewhat.
Yeah, hopping off the train. Well, Pete, this time again has flown right by. I want to thank you so much for taking time away from your weekend after a hard week, a very busy week, I'm sure, at Huntington Investment Advisors. Pete Sorrentino, thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris.
For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Chris DeSimeo on The Money.